everyone, and welcome to episode 109 of the Medieval Podcast. I'm Danielle Cebulski, also known as the 5-Minute Medievalist. I spent pretty much all of the last week glued to Zoom for one of the biggest annual conferences of medieval studies, and preparing for it is just one of the reasons last week's episode is coming to you a little bit late. So here's a snack of an episode in which Peter Konieczny from Medievalist.net and I give you a rundown of some of the most interesting tidbits we heard this week. Hi, Peter. How's it going?
Hey, not too bad. Not too bad. Enjoying the weekend.
Yes, me too. Well, we're recording on the weekend. So we've just come off of an entire week of Kalamazoo, so the International Congress of Medieval Studies that is usually at Kalamazoo, Michigan, but this year was totally on Zoom. So it was a great conference, wasn't it?
It was. It's not quite over because apparently starting on the day after we finished recording this, you can actually see a lot of the sessions that have been recorded. You just can't, there won't be live the day it took place. But I think I still like tune in to a lot. But yeah, it was a pretty slog of 6 days.
A slog.
Going 9 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. with half hour breaks every hour and a half. So.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot to take in. So I had to, of course, make a whole bunch of notes so I could remember what I had listened to. But it was good. I mean, the one advantage, if anyone who's listening has been to Kalamazoo before, is we didn't have to stay in the dorms.
That's to my favorite part.
That's like the unlockable bathrooms and, you know, the horrible sheets and towels. But I mean, it's the type of experience that brings people together. So I was actually really happy to get a good night's sleep and a nice shower every day before I started Kalamazoo.
What kind of chance of a good shower are you going to get? Like, how will the water be? That's always something I look forward to every year. So,
yeah, it's something. But we listened to a whole bunch of papers, and actually, I spoke for the first time at Kalamazoo this year, and you presided over a session. So we should get to those in a minute. But first, what were some of your favorite papers that you heard?
The very first paper I heard, it was by the name Elavie Levesque. And she was talking about examining manuscripts, the scientific analysis of manuscripts, figuring out parchment, things like that. But she was looking at the book covers, surviving covers, what they said. And it found that these covers from the Cistercian Monastery's manuscript collection, a lot of them were made from seal.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. Like they were getting the seal because you could figure out where what by animal and then kind of figure out where they were coming from. So man, that's a lot of fascinating scientific data. So, but yeah, they were getting seal skins from Norway, Scotland, even as far as Iceland.
That's very cool. So that's cool.
Could you imagine a medieval manuscript, that nice soft sealskin fur?
Well, I don't think I've ever touched sealskin in my life, but it looks very luxurious.
Now I'm thinking, of every manuscript being a little baby seal.
Yeah, it wasn't bad enough that they were lambs before this. What else did you hear that was good?
I heard Stuart Borsch talking about the Black Death and pandemics, and he was concentrating on Egypt. Again, fascinating kind of looking at the kind of situations there. You look at different plagues and it really swept through Cairo at a point, but the city officials, they were very on top of it, in terms of keeping track. They would have all the bodies brought to certain sections and neighborhoods, and then there'd be people there to count them. And apparently they even brought desks.
Wow.
Yeah, so you set up a desk, and then they would count. So that was really kind of fascinating too. So I saw that. Robin McCallum was talking about the English city of Scarborough in the early 14th century, and they were kind of quasi rebellious against the English king. Poor Edward II couldn't get a break.
Well,
but yeah, there was nice little interesting bits about how they were kind of fighting with the local authorities and kind of setting up these quasi governments of themselves and trading with the Scots. I thought that was really good. Yeah, so those were kind of my favorite papers so far.
Yeah, I mean, there were some sessions where I went to live ones knowing that I would want to go back and see a recorded one that was at the same time. So there are more papers to see. There were a few that stuck out for me. I picked three because I wanted to narrow it down a bit. And I want to be mindful of people's intellectual property. So just talking in vague terms, there were a few that I really quite liked. One was by Chiara Bonatti, and she was talking about love magic. We were both at that session. Yep. That was really fun. And some of the things I thought were really interesting that she talked about were like two main reasons for having a love potion. I think we think about them maybe as being drawing someone to you. And that's like one category. And the other one is preventing marital infidelity. But one of the things I thought was really interesting about that was she's looking at ones that are from Germany in the late 14th century. And many of them were gendered male. So they were love potions that, or love magic, spells, charms that men were supposed to be doing. And I think that's interesting because, you know, it tends to be something that's associated now with like teenage girls. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then some of them you had to write on a frog's tongue, which was pretty interesting, I thought. Another one that stood out for me was Catherine Ann Rush, who was talking about a couple of inventories of French noblewomen, one of them a former queen, and talking about the ivory in their inventories. And I think that's really interesting because I like looking at ivory objects, especially when 14th century is my favorite century. So the ones from there are interesting to me. But some of the records that we have show certain artisans and that several French nobles went to the same ivory artisan to get stuff commissioned or for repairs, which I thought was super cool. And then the last one that kind of stuck out to me as being interesting and something I want to learn more about, although there's so much good information, was Richard Ewing Barton, who did a paper on Berengaria of Navarre, who was the widow of Richard the Lionheart, right? Okay. And something that he said, and is true, it is in pretty much every history, she's this really like mild-mannered, shy, shrinking violet type of person. That's how she's talked about in histories, but she actually was enough of a bit of a hard ass lord that she got Le Mans put under interdict twice, once for 18 months. And if you look at the records as he did, it's her fault. Like it's her being a bit of a bully against the church. And so she has this reputation in part because of the way that the popes communicated with her and on her behalf, you know, trying to get her inheritance from King John and stuff. But she's actually was not a wallflower. Yeah. And this is kind of really interesting to me because she's always told in the same way. Oh. So these are things that I'd want to learn more about.
So she had a bit of a hard-boiled side, eh?
Yeah, where she was trying to exert her lord's rights over this town. And it didn't go well for the people. One of the interdicts was for 18 months, which is a very long time to not have any church services if you're living during such a religious time.
One roundtable that I really enjoyed was about the 13th Warrior, that film, the Antonio Banderas, starring kind of Beowulf, retold. So yeah, that was kind of interesting, just listening in like on the perspectives and the fact that we're still talking about it 25 years later. So,
Oh, you love that film.
Yeah. So I really like that.
And there was also the Battle Royale over the site of Crecy, which is something that people will be able to see. It was recorded, I think it was one of the ones that was recorded, where you had Michael Livingston and Kelly DeVries on one side and Cliff Rogers on the other, which is not unusual, but it made for a good session.
It was really good to see like people chiming in. If you do watch it, there's a little part where they show this little river in Crecy. And is it a little river? Is it nothing? Is it something? We can all debate, because that's very crucial to some of the arguments there.
Yeah.
Military people are always fun, so.
They're definitely not shy. And yeah, we had a session that we were both in, one that you were presiding over and that I was speaking at. And that was one on podcasting the Middle Ages. Did you want to say something about that?
Yeah. This is something we were kind of hoped to have happened last year's conference, but it was canceled. So we brought back nearly everybody that was supposed to talk to the first one. It was you, the people behind Saga Thing, Media Evil, and The Medieval Death Trip. I love all those podcasts too. I really enjoyed seeing all this discussion, especially other kind of podcasters chiming in as well. It's a fun session.
Yeah, it was a good session. And one of the sessions where people talked over each other the least, I think, during kind of question and answer, because I think as podcasters, we're used to like waiting for the right cues for people to speak. So that was kind of fun. But it just kind of went to show that even though we're all doing the Middle Ages, there are so many different ways that you could do podcasts and considerations to bear in mind and things like that. It was a really good session. And that one wasn't recorded, unfortunately. But you can follow all of these podcasters.
Yes, it will live on in our minds, at least.
And in our hearts. It was actually very well attended too. And I think that's probably because of the interest, not in necessarily people, you know, wanting to listen to us talk about podcasts, but maybe people wanting to create them themselves. That's the audience that I think was there. It's very hard to tell on Zoom.
We were talking about the technical aspects, the mindset of doing it. So that was really kind of interesting. And it was good to see the various opinions and ideas and why people do it, right? So.
Mm-hmm. So like having this group of people that's listening to how you put together a podcast makes me think that there are going to be more medieval podcasts coming out. That's always exciting, I think.
Yeah, we love podcasting here at medievalist.net. And there's lots of venues for people to reach out to a wider audience. And I think like podcasting is just one of those and a really good one. So,
yeah, it was a good session. It was a fun session.
You were also in another kind of roundtable session.
Yeah. And that was my first time ever speaking at Kalamazoo. So that was fun for me. Well, it was fun. And it was also my first and my second time speaking at Kalamazoo, both on the same day. So that was a bit hectic. But I had received the 2019 Lone Medievalist Prize for public outreach. And so I was invited to participate in this roundtable to talk about careers outside of academia. So full disclosure, I do teach college classes sometimes. Not at the moment. But I was there to, yeah, talk about how to make a career outside of academia. And so I thought really hard about that. I wrote that speech or the 5 to 7 minutes I was supposed to give about 6 times. And as I said during that session, that's one that has been recorded so people can see it again. I think part of it was because I had just written a book on how to live well, my How to Live Like a Monk book that's coming out in the fall. And so I had all this stuff that I wanted to share with people about how to have a good life, a life that you want, especially in the face of not finding a job in academia, because I think that can be really heartbreaking. So what I ended up distilling it down to was the fact that you really have to first figure out your mindset around it. So I've come to realize that building a career outside of academia has to do with mindset and has to do with skill set. And fortunately, you can adjust both of these things. And so what I was trying to tell people for this one was that you have to be able to picture that life that you want outside of academia. I mean, you're probably going to grieve the fact that you're not going to be a professor if that's not your path. And I mean, that is something that a lot of us go through. But then you have to visualize what you actually want so that you can work towards that goal. And so, yeah, that was what I wanted to bring to people. Maybe it was a little too perky. I don't know. You were there.
Yeah, you were a very positive influence on that podcast. So, and it was important, like talking about like, you know, the challenges of getting there, some of your expectations, things like that. And yeah, there's always, you know, bumps in the road as well. But, you know, I think it's a lot of about learning skills, things like that. In a similar way, like, you know, like with medievalist.net and creating that, you know, that was my kind of road outside of academia. There was challenges in like building that, especially the first few years, because I didn't know what I was doing. But there was a lot of other great presenters in that panel too. So
yeah, we have people that were teaching, for example, in high school, or we have people making a Viking coloring book. So all of these people had different ways and different roads. And it was mentioned close to the end that it is a difficult road to try and make it as a medievalist outside of the academy because there is no safety net. And so it's worth recognizing that it's challenging. It has been challenging for me. And so not minimizing that in the slightest, but I do think that you need to figure out where you're going to go and you don't need to be restrained by things that are, you know, just cultural parameters, like you have to work a 9-to-5 or you have to work a full-time job. You can find different ways to make yourself happy. That was what I was trying to get across.
Yes, we definitely don't work 9-to-5. Neither of us.
No, we definitely don't. And I'm starting to find ways to work less and still pay the bills. And so everything I'm trying to learn, I try to share, but I only had 5 to 7 minutes. So the point was just to get your goal in mind and remind everybody that it doesn't have to look like the path that other people have taken. I thought that was a good session, though. I enjoyed it. Although we all talked so long, there wasn't enough time for questions.
I think there were some questions at the end and stuff like that. But I think if you went in, you could, you know, kind of get yourself and understand where other people have come from and maybe be inspired.
Yeah.
Inspired to leave academia.
or just to find a way to work it into your life or work on a life outside of it. Mm-hmm. The whole idea, at least my perspective on it, is everything's okay. Everything is awesome. You can just do what you want.
What's your kind of verdict on doing an online conference like this? Now, for people that don't know, like, this Kalamazoo is usually held at Western Michigan University every year. It's usually a 4-day conference. About 3,000 people gather. This time it's online. There was a lot of debate over it because in part it's scheduled to be online again for next year. And so there's people that were kind of pro and people con on having this. But what was your opinion of doing it?
So this is kind of interesting because you and I had just attended the Medieval Academy of America's annual meeting, which was also on Zoom, but it was done differently. It was done in a webinar format where you didn't see people's cameras and people couldn't really chime in the same way. So the conference at Kalamazoo, people's cameras were available to them and they were encouraged to have them off. And that was kind of, could be a difficult thing because when you're speaking, you're trying to see, you know, well, I want to see if my jokes land, but you want to see if people are paying attention or if they're into it or if you need to adjust. Like, I'm always trying to adapt what I'm saying to the audience. When you can't see the audience, that's actually really a difficult thing. I could have thought of it as a podcast, I suppose, but you could actually ask questions on camera if someone called on you. So even though everyone was encouraged to have their cameras off, I would rather have seen everybody. That would have made it easier. But you could ask questions with your camera on, which I thought was good. So, I mean, it's not as good as being there in person because you don't have that serendipity, right, of meeting people by accident, sitting next to someone, having a conversation and that kind of stuff. I think it felt like the only way you could really interact with people was if you already knew them.
Yeah, that was true. Like I had interactions, but then again, like, they're always like, oh, I know this person and I'll send them a message, things like that. You and I were kind of sending text messages a couple times during these.
Yeah, well, that's because, you know, it was like we would be sitting next to each other at Kalamazoo.
Yes.
But another part of it was necessarily you have to end that Zoom session so that you can use it again for the next one. And so if you were at the actual conference, you'd have a conversation with people and then it could move into the hallway or whatever. But here, the chat, it has to end at a certain time. And so, I mean, it's always going to be better in person. I think the advantage is, at Kalamazoo, there are so many sessions going on simultaneously always that you really have to choose and you often will miss out on things. And with having some of them recorded, you could do both at the same time. You could be in two places at once, which is an advantage, I think.
True, true. It's a lot easier to leave the room when the conference is there. I'll be interested to see how many people actually registered, if they put that kind of numbers out, like how many people took part and attended, because I know I could see kind of on some chat forums that people are saying, like, this is my first time being able to go to Kalamazoo. I was never able to do it, go in person. So being able to attend online, I can see, like, some people are really, really happy to have this. And then I said, like, there's other people that, like, I'm not going to do this again. I want to have an in-person conference, especially if you've done 4 or 5 of these kind of online conferences in the year of teaching where you're teaching online. Yeah, you probably want to have some human to human contact.
Yeah. And I mean, you don't get your steps in at Western Michigan University. All of the sessions are always, always at the total opposite end of campus from your last one. So you get your steps in.
Yes, yes. It's exercise too.
Yeah. I wanted to do some like exercising or stretching while I was listening, but I also didn't want to, you know, lose a thought if I needed to write it down. So, but I got to have as much tea as I wanted, which was quite good. Well, I think this has been a good retrospective of Kalamazoo. So thanks, Peter, for joining me for this.
Thanks.
Wrap up.
Yeah, thanks. This is fun. See you next Kalamazoo.
A quick thanks to everyone on Patreon, as usual, for all your support. If you want to find out how to become a patron of the Medieval Podcast, please visit patreon.com/medievalist. And for everything from Kalamazoo to medieval zoology, follow medievalist.net on Facebook or Twitter at medievalist. And you can find me, Danielle Sabolski, on social media at 5minmedievalist or 5minutemedievalist. Our music is Beyond the Warriors by Geek Frog. Thanks for listening, and have yourself an amazing day.